So yeah, I'm wondering how everyone is tonight at home and here at Guy House. I guess the law of statistics would be that there's a variety of experience. And I won't ask you to call out how you're doing. Sometimes that's done. But I'm guessing, and our small groups have perhaps given us a bit of an inkling, those who came today, of how people are doing. Of course, that was earlier today, and it may be different now, but very normal and expected that at this point in a retreat that there's likely to still be a lot of tiredness, and often other things are showing up, irritation, boredom, this isn't quite what I was expecting, why isn't it like that other centre that now is appearing really lovely in my mind's eye compared with this. There may be a longing to be doing this from home, where suddenly it feels like it'd be a lot more comfortable. And maybe for those online, maybe you wish you were here. Maybe it's just right. And maybe it's better than expected. And maybe it's changing, in a kind of a roller coaster of better, worse, up and down. And the sort of little laughs and nods, I'm guessing that some of this is resonating for many of you. Certainly that's been my experience on retreat, and it's funny how the best of times and the worst of times can happen in the same location. So before I go more into some reflections tonight, my plan is to offer some reflections and a little small kind of practice around working with difficulty. But just wanted to cover a couple of practical things before I forget. One is just a reminder, really, that the walking room is for walking. That's its intention. And it is offered as a space for yoga before breakfast. So that's either early, really early, before the morning sit, or, if you don't need to have breakfast swiftly, that would be another opportunity and have breakfast slightly later. As long as you don't miss out on the porridge, very important. That'd be a shame. But, I think we want to acknowledge that for those of you here at Gaia House, that there aren't many spaces for yoga and for movement, and we know that, and we know that that will be frustrating for some people here, and we're limited in what the conditions that Gaia House offer in terms of space. If your room is a possibility, if you're on your own, and if you're sharing, then it may be there are times of day where you know it's going to be free, and that could be a space for some movement. Or potentially, if you can do it quite quietly, perhaps with a note, a kind of negotiation, like, would it be okay if I practiced some yoga or some movement practice, at this point in the lunch period? And but if someone needs it for a nap, then they could let you know. We don't really like to encourage a lot of cross communication, but we understand it's difficult if you want to move, and there's sensitivities around how we use a shared space. So the walking room during the rest of the day, although if it's empty, would be incredibly tempting to practice yoga. You never know when someone will come in and want to use it for walking, and that is its intended purpose. So we ask for your support there. And if we can think of any other spaces or times that could be used for yoga or movement practice, we'll let you know. Not sure if there will be other possibilities, but we'll have a think. And for the online Sangha, we're aware that there's a whole range of abilities and sort of capabilities in terms of the body and many are joining us who are not able to come to Guy House for very good physical reasons, and we're doing our best to offer what we offer in a way that's accessible. But if that's not enough and we could learn, then please do feel free to give us specific feedback. We would welcome that through the notice board or the other forums that are open to you. So, I was planning sort of this evening, and a few themes were coming to mind that felt relevant for me and hopefully relevant for this retreat and for some of you at least. So this theme of difficulty and the challenges that arise on retreat. Before I go more into that, I was reflecting on what does it, we've been talking a lot about pausing and stopping, and at this time of year, with the long nights and the kind of the way nature draws into itself, is a real invitation to rest and to really, if we can, and a retreat is a good opportunity to do this, rediscover our being mode as opposed to our doing mode, and to kind of rebalance a little bit lives that often are very busy, or even if we don't have a lot of activities, they can be busy in our heads or in our minds, or even, you know, online these days. And as I'm sure you've discovered, that's not easy to do. That almost like the body and mind, it has its own, I don't know, life in a way. You know, I feel like I really, really need some rest and a quiet sit, and instead my mind is problem solving all the issues of the last month. And it's like, oh, I don't really want to be doing that, but actually that's what it is inclining towards. And actually the effort of trying to stop that can be quite stressful and not really help the intention of rest. So talking about stopping and resting, what I was reflecting, what are we stopping from, or what are we pausing in? So in the early part of a retreat, often it's just enough to come back to an anchor, and just not even think about what we're coming from. We're just trying to steady and stable our minds and bodies. And that actually reminds me, I had an intention, I forgot to just speak a little bit about working with an anchor for those that are perhaps more new to this practice. Because I think, as many of you have found, we're not offering a lot of specific guidance about techniques of working with the breath and the body, and perhaps some of you are finding that a bit disorientating and expecting maybe a little bit more guidance. Our intention is to focus more on offering a space of rest and perhaps discovery, rediscovery going into the new year, that each of us will be navigating for ourselves. And many of you have well-established practices. But just in case it's helpful, just to name that it is really helpful to have an anchor. And by an anchor, what I mean is a sort of home ground where when your mind wanders off somewhere or other, problem solving, for example, when you notice that you have somewhere to guide your attention back, like a shepherd bringing their sheep home to the fold. And where you bring your attention back can be really varied, you know, many different practices. So Kirsten was emphasizing the ground, coming back to that physical quality of connection with the ground, or the breath, reconnecting with the breath. And we're emphasizing reconnecting with the body, you know, these physical sensations, because they're more grounding, more easy to stabilize the energy of the mind often than more perhaps subtle practices of awareness of thoughts. But other traditional practices are awareness of sounds or using words such as phrases of a metta, sutta or mantra. All these are ways of stabilizing the attention, and this is part of what we mean by resting and pausing. It's like finding a way to not continue in an energy of mind that's going round and round and round in its own momentum. So we need somewhere else for our attention. And the way we do this is really important, you know, that when we come back to body and breath, to the sense of contact with the ground, so for those who are interested or know, that's vitakka in the Buddhist tradition, this where do we place attention intentionally, placing our attention in the present moment. But the attitude, the way we do that, is equally important. We can judge ourselves for thinking about our next meal, looking forward to the hollyhock sauce. I mean, maybe not judging. I don't judge that particularly, but I do get a bit fed up when I'm particularly focused on it. Or it may be, you know, a painful thought, and we just don't want to be thinking about it. And we have ideas of ourselves as a meditator that would not be like that, or sleepy. And so coming back to the anchor might happen in quite a harsh way, you know, with a bit of a reprimand verbally, or just that energetic, oh, don't want to do that. So the way we come back to that present moment in the anchor really affects the experience of relating to that anchor, you know. So we were encouraging actually a kindly way of coming back. That it's normal to have a wandering mind, it's normal to be sleepy, very normal to be irritated, to have a mismatch between where we are and where part of us wants to be. This is the work, really, of being on retreat, is becoming friends with our human condition, coming to terms with that. And seeing this over and over again can help us. Oh, it's okay. Can I come back in a kindly way, or at least with an intention for kindness, even if it's not here? So as the retreat's going on, from this simple just coming back again and again and again, there might be a little bit more stability in the system. There may not be, but there might be enough to start to get a little bit interested in where we're coming back from. So this is, in a way, what I've already been naming, these states of mind and heart that may be showing up right now. Sleepiness and irritation and so on and so forth. I realize I'm jumping ahead towards the end of my talk, so I'm just having a quick look. Yeah, I think that's good. I think, as I'm already doing it, I'm going to talk about the hindrances, which I was going to talk about later, but I'll do that now. So many of you will probably recognize this teaching because it tends to be mentioned every retreat at Guy House. Maybe you won't recognize it because you're asleep. Or maybe I'll describe them in such a refreshing new way, it will be a revelation. And for those of you who haven't heard them before, it hopefully will be a useful teaching, whether you're here or at home. Because there's something quite reassuring about this teaching of what I've just called the hindrances, which are states of mind and heart that commonly arise, a lot of the time, whether we're on retreat or not. And they're called hindrances because they obscure the natural brightness of our mind and our clarity in our heart. And I believe that for every human being that we're not in a hindrance all the time, that there are moments when we are actually feeling peaceful or loving or joyful. But of course there are many times that we don't. And why I say reassuring is because they were mapped out 2,600 years ago for people in a completely different country and culture and age of human civilization, and they're very recognizable today. So in a sense, these are universal, or they could be seen as universal states of mind and body that we're in very good company in experiencing. You know, these were experienced by Buddha, by the followers of the Buddha, and by people throughout time. So these hindrances, just very briefly, are called traditionally in English sense, desire, aversion, agitation and restlessness, dullness and sleepiness, and doubt. And I'm not sure if they map the totality of difficult experiences a human can experience, but they certainly cover quite a lot of ground, and a lot of different emotions and challenges can, you know, have a relationship with these categories. So just briefly, for those that might not be familiar, you see if you've had experienced this so far on this retreat for a moment or longer. So sense desire, as I understand it, is this pull towards something that you don't have in this moment. If only kind of mind and feeling, or I'd rather it was like this. So this could be, you know, the shadow side of having a lovely experience, and really, I'm really glad if people are having lovely experiences. But then the sense desire would be that desire that wishes it was still here once it's gone, that's hanging on to it even as it's slipping away. And it often shows up, I would say, in this kind of environment as fantasy, you know, as actually it would be really nice to think about this rather than the pain in my knee. Yeah, and it could be, you know, a holiday, or, you know, my ideal situation, or that cup of tea that's waiting for me after this sit, or that plan I have once I manage to get out of here. So, and you might notice that, you know, that it, in a way, it's also reacting to aversion, which is the not wanting. So they're kind of like twins, you know, that there's often in the wanting something that is not here or is about to end, there is the aversion to that experience of it not being here, or the impermanence of the pleasant. But sometimes aversion shows up really more purely as aversion, and the desire isn't so obvious, you know, as unpleasant experience, the not wanting. So that could be a painful thought, a painful emotion, or physical discomfort. And you might notice, and if you haven't noticed, it might be interesting to look at if there is a painful thought or emotion, that usually there is some way it's showing up in the body, and that often these are all co-arising together. Sometimes it can be interesting to explore aversion. Boredom is one, which may not seem very interesting by definition. So that can be a really good place to get interested, because it's like, well, boredom, actually, it's one. It's a really difficult experience. I think perhaps one is, in a way, one of the more difficult ones, because there's inherently a lack of interest in trying to engage with it beyond just doing something else. So if you notice that in the mix, it might be helpful to think, oh, is this boredom? What am I averse to? So it's a form of aversion. What is it that actually I'm not liking right now? Because often it's masking that, and it's just like a blob. But actually, well, what is it? Is there a problem? Where is the problem? Maybe there isn't an obvious problem. And as you look for it, you know, maybe you'll find something underlying that you hadn't noticed, or maybe it will sort of shift and change. With boredom, it might be that there's nothing much, but you're not used to a kind of calmer or quieter state. We're used to often a lot of drama in life, and when it's not around, it can be a bit disorientating. So one way of engaging with boredom could be, what's pleasant right now? And it may be that there's something quite subtle in the mix that you're not noticing, like some subtle calmness or quietness, or maybe an easeful breath. Or, you know, if you look for that, it may be that you might find something that helps make it more interesting or pleasant to be in that situation. And another way of responding to aversion, including boredom, can also be just widening the awareness to just beyond the body, to open the eyes or take in the room, take in sounds, and create a bigger container, almost like diffusing some of the energy that can build up with aversion. So restlessness and agitation, like another form of aversion in a way, or the opposite, sense desire, both could lead to agitation, which could be in the mind, of a busy mind that can't quite rest or focus, or as a body that doesn't want to be still. So in all of these hindrances, it is helpful to recognize this is normal. This is a normal part of human experience. It's not a problem. It's not wrong. You know, it might feel like a problem, but it's not wrong that it's here. And it's more like, well, how can we engage with them in a way that feels fruitful and helpful and full of deep care? And I'm realizing I'm sort of talking about ways of responding, and this is not an exhaustive list, really, of responses. And real encouragement to really get curious and find ways that feel helpful for you to respond. So with restlessness and agitation, for me, one of the things I find helpful is a soothing breath, and just to imagine my breath going right through the body, and a little bit like, or very like actually, the Qigong that Jai has been leading, sort of imagining the breath swooping down even beyond the body, down into the ground, and breathing up from the ground into the body, almost like kind of earthing some of that energy, a bit like a lightning conductor, letting it go down into the ground. And again, widening my awareness, feeling the weight of my body can bring some calmness. Sometimes just a little bit of gentle movement can be helpful, or swaying movement. Sometimes it's just observing it and waiting for it to eventually pass. And if it's really challenging, actually moving sometimes is helpful, like standing or changing position. But if possible, not to move a lot. You know, if we're in a meditation, still practice making an intention to move once or twice consciously can be helpful. If we're moving a lot, it might actually feed the agitation and make it worse. And when I've been on personal retreat, actually I find walking practice really helpful. Something about that rhythm of walking it can be quite soothing while moving the body. So sloth and torpor is the old-fashioned sort of Victorian way, or early 20th century way, of describing sleepiness and dullness. So a mental dullness and a physical dullness, or sleepiness. For me, what I find helpful is mainly remembering this is normal and not judging myself for it too much. And bringing a lot of care, like what would really be helpful for this session? What do I really need? And sometimes it's hard to know, particularly if there's dullness in the mind, because sometimes the body does just naturally, in a way, just need to rest and drifts off for a while and then sort of wakes up and there's a bit more energy again. That is very known. Even while I've been here, this retreat, from my side, I'm sure from your side. And there's something about sort of riding the waves, I find, that I find really helpful. It's like the mists over time start to clear in their own time. And if you've come from a life that's incredibly busy and you're really short of sleep, or you're not sleeping well here, sometimes extra sleep is needed, and you know, having a nap in the break, in the meal times, or you know, in the early stages of retreat, sometimes missing periods here to catch up with sleep is needed, really, because there's a sort of often a bit of a energy deficit from life. But I found that although I've done that a bit, if I've been a little unwell, that for me, often I can kind of ride it out and then it sort of clears while I'm, you know, supposedly meditating by all outward appearances. Who knows what's going on inside? Yes. Yes. And doubt is the last of these five, which I think of as a mixture of aversion, sometimes desire, sense desire, with agitation, all in the mind. doubt is not so much a kind of open-minded questioning, which is very healthy and good to have, but more a mind that cannot rest in one place and is always bringing up something else to consider. And I've had quite a big history, well, all of these, as we probably all have, but doubt in particular, particularly around decisions. So I think maybe this would be good. But immediately my mind generates the opposite. I think, well, maybe that. But as soon as I start to think about that, it goes back to the first one. Or even generates another possibility. And I have like 10 possibilities. It's like I'm really tired. And that can, you know, feed off itself. I don't know if you've experienced that. You know, it might happen being here. It might be decisions in life are coming up on retreat and think, I really need to think this through right now. But the mind's not really following a path to think it through in a constructive way. It's bringing up a lot of vacillation, or it might be doubts about about being here. Why am I here? The aversion again, but in a more doubtful kind of a way, doubting your own capacity to make decisions for yourself. And really helpful to recognize that that's happening. That's a hindrance, because one of the important ways these hindrances tend to manifest is that when one's in a hindrance, it's like everything we do is coming from the perspective of that hindrance. So if I apply a doubtful mind to doubt, I tend to have more doubt. Does that make sense? Because I'm doubtful. I'm even doubtful of my capacity to relate to doubt. And can you see, it's like when I'm in that whirlwind, the that the way it tends to go is to generate energy that keeps the whole system going. And if there's aversion, for example, generally it's unpleasant. You know, I really don't like this feeling. I'm a poor meditator for having this feeling. I really should get rid of this feeling. You know, so I've got aversion to the aversion. Often we don't realize it's happening because we're in it. You know, that's the color of the world right now. And it can manifest in just such a subtle way as well. You know, that I'm practicing lots of loving kindness right now because I really want the pain in my knee to go away. Come on, be kind, go away, kind, go away. Oh, it's getting worse, I'm not doing it right. Yeah, and I do that still, and I hope that you're seeing, like, this is really natural. It's like we've got such a fascinating, complex, tricksy human condition, you know, that throws up these habit patterns all the time. And I think part of what is I find really wonderful about this path is starting to get to know this and starting to ease these relationships when they happen and these patterns, so they have less power over me, and I start to understand myself and see my way through more. It's not that they necessarily stop, they might become less impactful or less prominent, but more that they're not so you know, sweeping me off my center as much. So one metaphor for generally for these kind of movements that I find helpful, so getting away all these hindrances, in a way they are versions of what the Buddha called dukkha, suffering, that one of their roots, or far down into the root, is they're all versions of craving and aversion, of wanting and not wanting. And the movement of these, of craving and aversion, is trying to sort out this present moment experience with the energy that's creating it. So it's like the knot gets tighter and tighter and tighter. If I apply it to sense desire, it might be something like, you know, again, I do speak from experience here, I just feel so much better once I've eaten a chocolate or I've had a glass of wine. And I actually might do for a little while, but then it doesn't last. It's like, oh, I think another one. And you know, it's like, and then I get the after effect, if the disadvantages of having too much chocolate or too much wine. So I feel it's a bit like a knot. When I was young, a young child, I used to quite like making knots and unmaking knots. And I noticed, you know, that trying to undo a knot by pulling tighter generally pulls the knot tighter. Occasionally it will release, but generally it doesn't. And some of those knots, if many of you do sort of sewing or knitting, or this is a very feminine, I suppose, stereotypical feminine example, but sometimes threads seem to knot themselves. I think they just loop around in a way that gets them a bit stuck. And if I just pull to undo it, the knot locks, and then there's a bigger problem. And the way to undo that knot, which I really loved doing as a child, was like to ease the threads together and start to create a bit more space. And then slowly, slowly, I'd start to see, oh, that's going under that loop, that's going through that one. Start to tease it apart. And then this immensely satisfying moment when the whole thing releases and the knot's gone. So in some ways, practice can be like that. That these movements of heart and mind can be a bit like knots that are forming within us. And turning towards, with that attitude of kindness and softness, can be a bit like softening the knot, trying to invite a bit more space to start to see a little bit more clearly what's happening in this kind of knot. where might it be particularly helpful to bring some kindness or some ease or a caring gesture or a soothing breath? And it may be that that knot can't be undone by an act of will, but we're creating the conditions where it can start to release itself more easily, or release enough for us to see a bit more what's going on and to understand ourselves a bit more and give ourselves the possibility to perhaps forgive ourselves or bring compassion to our human condition. I was reflecting on the themes we've already been talking about in terms of stillness and darkness. And for me, they are quite similar and connect with unknowing and, in a way, confusion or beyond what I know. And often, when there are challenges around for me with hindrances or other challenges, often I can't say that I brilliantly, like a craftsperson or a doctor or a surgeon, look at it, understand it, see the solution, and wow. It's more stopping the activity that is creating it. And then it's more like that invites some letting go or some letting be. And then something new comes into the mix that I haven't constructed. It's like the part of this practice which could be called grace, or what is beyond our immediate known world in that moment. I'd like to also perhaps think of it as intuition or wisdom, that feels like it's beyond this particular mind in this moment. Maybe it is part of our own intuition and wisdom that has just enough space to come and help us in that moment. Maybe it's even from beyond, you know, for those of us who might be of a more religious disposition, that sense of God or Holy Spirit or wisdom from nature. It's like, what gives it, what gives space for us to come into connection with that which actually often knows what's needed if we're able to listen and hear it? And at this time of year, there might be perhaps a particular possibility or invitation in this darker time of year to give space to these more subtle parts of ourselves and our world, the quieter parts that we might not hear so often in a busier or brighter time. And this space of unknowing, or what might feel like confusion, might not necessarily be different from clarity. And I think, you know, clarity might not be a kind of bright light. It might be just a clear space, like a dark sky, in which we start to see the stars that are shining, or just have a sense, oh, this is what's needed right now. I'll just give a little example of, this is a very, very small moment, from today. I was in a walking period, and I was thinking about tonight and about these themes, and I remembered something from a particular religious tradition. It was the dark night of the soul. It was the word phrase that came to mind, and this is an example of sense desire, I guess, because it came and it was like, oh, yes, that's amazing, what is it? And I want to look it up. What am I going to say? This is great, or is it going to be great? And I noticed that there was this like quite subtle but kind of grasping of wanting to speak to this theme, thinking that this would be relevant. So why it seemed relevant was this sense of darkness and of unknowing, and this perhaps tradition within all mystical and spiritual traditions of the value of that. And in the Christian tradition, there's this dark night of the soul, but it's a lot more than that, because I did look it up later. But I'm giving it as an example because my mind was straight away, it was really busy around this theme, and I could feel, for me, I sometimes get quite excited and a bit like a puppy, and nothing wrong with that, I know, but there's something that, you know, my mind narrows down on the thing it's after. And so I thought, what would it be like to practice right now? And knowing, I don't really know what the dark night of the soul is enough, or at least I don't need to look it up right now. What else is here? And I felt my feet on the ground, and I looked around me, I saw the trees, and I saw other people practicing walking practice. And there was just something in opening and putting to one side that thought train that just in that moment, uninvited, this incredible sense of peace came, and a sense of the eternality of this moment and how beautiful that is. And I didn't ask for it, and I didn't particularly strive to create it, and it just came, and then it went. But it was lovely, and it was a reminder that actually it can be really helpful to remember that we don't have to, I don't have to always be following the particular impulse in my mind at one time. And that widening perception to ask what else is here right now can often be very helpful to allow something else unknown and unexpected to come into the mind and heart. And I couldn't remember an explicit example of something more perhaps strong. But I do know the feeling, and perhaps others here might know, of sometimes there's an issue, you know, like a relational issue or a work issue, and that the mind is chewing over it again and again. And then at some point we put it down or we're distracted. And then the next day or a time later, suddenly it's not such a big problem anymore. You know, and it's like sometimes we can't solve issues through an act of will. And those who practice creative arts perhaps might be familiar, you know, with creative practice. Often you need to give space for something new to come. So in this retreat, what would it be like to give space for something new to come in your life? And I won't speak much to this, but just touching upon maybe in our times, as things get more challenging and stronger with, for example, climate change and social issues and the terrible violence unfolding in many parts of the world, not least the Middle East right now. These are very, very strong impulses to want to solve problems and to find a solution. And that's, of course, in many ways very appropriate and needed. But on the other hand, I've been noticing in myself and perhaps in the culture more widely, just how much the polarization is increasing at the moment, and how much I also am getting pulled into casting villains and heroes, and finding myself having strong reactions of this is right and that is wrong. And this practice of relaxing and pausing and allowing ourselves to see the complexity of a situation, I think helps remind me of complexity, you know, that each human being is so complex. We come from such a wide web of conditions. And that actually maybe this practice can help us, and particularly this opening to the unknowing, can help remind us that there are spaces beyond right and wrong, and that answers may come not from our usual ways of thinking and being. And maybe we particularly need that in the world at the moment. So that might give extra value really to what we're doing here at this time, you know, offering something to our world, which is not the business as usual way of engaging with our times. So I'd like to offer a small practice, which I think we'll do now before a break, which is specifically around working and relating to these hindrances. So if you'd like to have a little stretch, perhaps if you need to, because we've been sitting a long time, please do. May be helpful to do this practice standing if you need a change of posture. It's not going to be very long, between 5 and 10 minutes. If you prefer to sit, then finding a comfortable posture, and if you're able to sit upright, that's probably quite helpful. But if the body needs a different posture, then please do follow that wisdom. And if lying down, maybe having the eyes open might help bring some wakefulness to the posture. So this is a version of the practice called rain or grain that Tara Brach particularly has as her central teaching, that I've learnt from her. We'll practice it now however we are. It's often particularly helpful when there is challenge or difficulty, one of these hindrances around. So G stands for grounding. So for me the word pause is really helpful, just taking a pause in the midst of whatever's here right now. Whatever is flowing through the heart or mind or body, or all three. And with what is flowing through, feeling the ground beneath. Or if you're not in contact with the ground, the surface that you're resting on. And particularly encouraging any sense of support that you feel from those surfaces. Maybe particularly encouraging the body to rest or let go a little into any sense of being held. If you relate to the ground as a friendly presence, you could bring that in, a big friendly presence of a kindly being just holding you so you can rest into that support. And if the breath is resourcing for you, then it might be also helpful to take some deeper breaths. And on the out-breath, inviting the body to release again down into the ground or the surface you're resting on. Opening up the body, opening any nourishing aspect of the breath that is here for you. And if the breath is not a helpful resource, then maybe just feeling the weight of the body resting on the ground and any other part of your body that feels helpful to bring in, such as hands or feet, that feels a grounding, helpful place for your attention. For some of us, it can be helpful, particularly if there's a lot of agitation, to open the eyes and look around and take in the space that we're in as another way of grounding in the present moment. So the R of grain, or rain, before G was added, is recognize. So that's again turning now to just noticing what's here, and if there's a particularly strong state, maybe checking out if it is connected with any of the hindrances that I've mentioned. Is there wanting or not wanting here? Is there an unpleasant sensation in the body? Is there any restlessness or agitation? Dullness, sleepiness, doubt, maybe a mixture, or maybe not here at all, and it can be really helpful to know times when there is no hindrance here. So A is allow. And it's bringing a little bit more online the quality of having an intention to let myself be with this, or let it be here. Can I be with this? And sometimes the answer is no. And if that is the case, it's can I be with the not wanting this to be here? That's okay too. Sometimes the breath can help us allow breathing with this experience unfolding. Softening the body, opening the body or the attention or the eyes. In eye of grain or rain is investigate. This is bringing curiosity to what is here. So willingness to find out a little bit more. What is this experience? What's going on? And if you notice the mind gets quite busy and enters into a more reactive problem-solving mode, it might be helpful to come more to the body. Just notice what's showing up in the body right now. And as the allowing sort of mingles with investigating, it may be that more recognizing happens. It's like, oh, this is here. And underlying this aversion is actually a heartfelt desire for comfort and ease, for example. Oh, that's just so natural to have that desire. Can I allow that to be here, even if I'm not experiencing it It's okay to have that desire. And it might even move into goodwill, really wishing myself comfort and ease. Not from a place of aversion, but really from a place of just goodwill and wanting to nourish ourselves. So that's N of grain, is nourishing. What's needed? What does my heart long for? These are the questions that may open up that space of unknowing to allow an answer to come from beyond, from our wisdom. And it may be helpful to just gently remind ourselves, also N of not self, that what is arising right now is normal and a sign of our humanity, our common humanity. It's not particularly me or mine, it's arising out of conditions, and it will pass with changing conditions. Patterns unfolding in space. So I'd like to finish this little practice with a quote, a poem by Rumi. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other doesn't make any sense. Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field, I'll meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase each other don't make any sense.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.